Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The Death of Nature Women, Ecology, and the Scientific Revolution by Carolyn Merchant is a foundational work in environmental history, feminist theory, and the history of science. First published in 1980, it examines how European thought between roughly 1500 and 1700 changed from an organic view of the Earth as a living, generative body to a mechanistic view of nature as inert matter available for control. Merchant argues that this shift was not only a scientific development, but also a cultural and political transformation linked to capitalism, patriarchy, and changing attitudes toward labor, reproduction, land, and knowledge. The book is best understood as an interdisciplinary historical critique rather than a technical history of scientific discovery. Its purpose is to show how metaphors of nature and gender helped authorize new forms of extraction, experimentation, and social discipline. It remains influential because it connects ecological crisis to deep assumptions embedded in modern Western science and culture. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the replacement of an organic cosmos with a mechanistic model of nature. Merchant centers the book on a major shift in European cosmology, the decline of an organic image of the Earth and the rise of a mechanical image. In the older worldview, nature was frequently understood as a living organism, often imagined as a mother who nourished human life. This metaphor did not prevent exploitation, but it placed moral limits on certain destructive acts because harming the Earth could be imagined as violating a living body. During the Scientific Revolution, this symbolic structure weakened. Nature increasingly appeared as passive matter governed by external laws, comparable to a machine whose parts could be separated, measured, and rearranged. Merchant does not claim that science alone caused ecological destruction. Her argument is more cultural mechanistic imagery made intervention, control, and extraction appear intellectually legitimate. Once nature was no longer treated as self-organizing or spiritually charged, mining, experimentation, and technological manipulation could be framed as progress rather than violation. The importance of this argument lies in showing that scientific models carry ethical consequences. A worldview can shape what a society regards as permissible action. Secondly, gendered metaphors linking the domination of women in nature. A central contribution of The Death of Nature is its analysis of the recurring association between women and nature in early modern European thought. Merchant shows that nature was often feminized in two contrasting ways. It could appear as a nurturing mother who gives life, or as a disorderly, unruly force that must be disciplined. Both images mattered because they connected cultural ideas about gender to ideas about the natural world. As patriarchal institutions sought greater control over property, reproduction, and household labor, similar language of mastery appeared in descriptions of nature. Merchant argues that the new science inherited and intensified these associations by treating both female bodies and the earth as objects to be investigated, ordered, and controlled. The value of this analysis is not that it reduces science to sexism, but that it reveals how metaphors can organize social power. Images that seem poetic or incidental can influence what forms of authority appear natural. By tracing these connections, Merchant helped establish ecofeminism as a serious historical and philosophical framework rather than a loose analogy between environmental and gender oppression. Thirdly, scientific revolution as a cultural program of control rather than pure discovery. Merchant challenges the conventional heroic narrative of the scientific revolution as a simple triumph of reason over superstition. She acknowledges the intellectual importance of figures such as Francis Bacon, René Descartes, and other architects of modern science. But she asks what kind of relationship to the world their methods encouraged. Her critique focuses on the language of interrogation, mastery, reduction, and control that accompany new experimental and mathematical approaches. Nature was increasingly understood as something to be forced to reveal its secrets, broken into parts, and made useful for human purposes. This mattered because scientific knowledge developed alongside commercial expansion, state power, mining, colonial activity, and new technologies of production. Merchant does not reject empirical inquiry itself. Instead, she questions the social assumptions that framed inquiry as domination. The book therefore turns attention from discoveries alone to the cultural program surrounding them. Scientific method becomes historically situated, shaped by economic and gendered relations rather than floating above society. This approach remains important because it allows readers to respect scientific knowledge while still examining the values embedded in its institutions and metaphors. Fourthly, witch hunts, reproductive knowledge, and the suppression of female authority. Merchant treats the early modern witch hunts as part of a broader transformation in social and intellectual authority. She does not present them merely as irrational eruptions of fear. Instead, she places them within a context in which female knowledge of healing, childbirth, sexuality, and local nature came under pressure from church, state, emerging medical professions, and patriarchal household structures. The persecution of women accused of witchcraft helped to legitimize forms of practical knowledge associated with women and rural communities. This argument connects to the book as a whole, because the control of nature was also a control of bodies, especially bodies associated with fertility and reproduction. Merchant links the mechanistic worldview to a wider impulse to regulate what had previously been less centralized forms of knowledge and power. The point is not that all women shared a single ecological wisdom, but that certain female roles and knowledges became suspect as authority shifted toward male-dominated institutions. This discussion gives the book a social dimension beyond abstract philosophy. It shows how changes in cosmology were tied to law, medicine, labor, sexuality, and everyday life. Lastly, ecological crisis is a problem of worldview, economy, and ethics. The death of nature is not only a history of ideas, it is also an explanation of why modern environmental problems cannot be solved by technology alone. Merchant argues that ecological degradation is rooted in a worldview that treats the earth as dead matter, and in economic systems that reward extraction, expansion, and commodification. If nature is imagined as passive material, then rivers, forests, soils, and minerals can be treated primarily as resources. This does not mean that changing metaphors automatically repairs ecological damage, but it does mean that environmental reform requires cultural and ethical change as well as scientific expertise. Merchant invites readers to reconsider relationships based on interdependence, restraint, and reciprocity rather than domination. Her argument remains relevant because climate change, biodiversity loss, pollution, and resource depletion all involve assumptions about what humans are entitled to take and transform. The book is strongest when it shows that environmental crises are not merely technical failures, they are also failures of imagination, political economy, and moral relationship. In this sense, Merchant provides a historical basis for ecological thinking that includes gender, labor, power, and knowledge. In conclusion, The Death of Nature is best suited for readers interested in environmental history, feminist theory, philosophy of science, intellectual history, and the cultural roots of ecological crisis. It is especially useful for students and scholars who want to understand how scientific concepts emerge within social worlds rather than as isolated breakthroughs. Activists and environmentally concerned readers can also benefit from its central lesson: ecological damage is not only a matter of poor management or insufficient technology, but also a result of historical assumptions about control, gender, and economic use. Compared with many environmental books that focus on pollution, conservation, or climate policy, Merchant offers a deeper genealogy of the ideas that made exploitation seem reasonable. Compared with general histories of the scientific revolution, she foregrounds gendered language, metaphors of nature, and the ethical consequences of mechanistic thought. The book can feel demanding because it combines history, philosophy, and feminist critique. And some of its broad contrasts between organic and mechanistic worldviews have been debated. Even so, its importance lies in opening a field of inquiry. It shows that images of nature are never neutral. They help define what societies value, what they permit, and what they destroy. That makes the book a landmark in ecofeminist and environmental thought. If you would like to support Carolyn Merchant, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.